From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 91 of Little Brother for the 2nd of July, 2022. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! Last week, I mentioned that the European Commission was looking into what they are calling chat control. This concept refers to systems that would snoop on chat conversations, looking for signs of sex trafficking and grooming. The goal is at odds with communications privacy, and the German federal government asked some tough questions. Well, they got some answers. Among the highlights, the Commission is content with a 10% error rate in the automation process, that yes, they will be sifting through consensual sexting messages, and most annoyingly, that their solution to end-to-end encryption is to use device-side scanning. That's right, they expect you to have your device that is your property that you paid for report to them what you are chatting about. This item shouldn't really come as much of a surprise, since there is a war going on in the region, but the Russian hacker group known as Killnet have been attacking cyber assets of companies and government sites in Lithuania. A statement from Killnet gives the motive as revenge for Lithuania's action to ban the passage of Russian goods through the country. This is problematic for Russia because the Kaliningrad Oblast, much like the state of Alaska here in the U.S., is geographically separated from the main body of the country by another country's land. In order to get from Kaliningrad to the rest of Russia, you need to pass through either Lithuania or Poland, neither of which would seem to be particularly viable at this point for the movement of goods, or people really. According to TV3 in Lithuania, the attacks have hit the Ministries of Foreign Affairs, Internal Affairs, Defense, Justice, and the State Tax Inspectorate. Brendan Carr, one of the commissioners that make up the Federal Communications Commission, has called upon Google and Apple to remove TikTok from their respective application stores. Carr's complaint is that TikTok's use of user data is done in a manner that violates both stores' policies and should therefore not be permitted. When asked, Carr has indicated that the letter does not represent any kind of regulatory hook, but rather that he is interested in getting Apple and Google on board to rein in TikTok without using the FCC's regulatory powers to do so. For their part, TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, have responded that some restricted portion of their non-American workforce do, in fact, have access to the data produced by American users of the app. However, they have offered their reassurances, for what it's worth, that their access is subject to a series of robust cybersecurity controls. This should probably come as no shock to anyone. A new hacktivist group have sprung up called SiegeSec, and they are largely targeting the governments of anti-abortion states. A statement posted to the group's Telegram channel read in part, quote, "Like many, we are also pro-choice. As added pressure to the U.S. government, We have leaked many internal documents and files retrieved from Kentucky's and Arkansas's government server. These docs have plenty of employee PII and lots more. The attacks will continue. Our main targets include government servers of the states with anti-abortion laws, end quote. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. This week's pwn, according to The Reload, is an own goal shot by the Office of the Attorney General for the State of California. The AG's office set up a web portal with publicly accessible information on gun owners in the state. It included personally identifiable information for holders of concealed carry permits, including full name, race, home address, date of birth, and the date the permit was issued. In addition, nearly 3,000 individuals with standard licenses in Los Angeles County also had their information exposed. The AG has responded that they are examining the information. At the time that I'm recording this, the portal is inaccessible with a message reading, "Website temporarily unavailable." We need to talk about the Dobbs decision some more. As I said last week, this isn't really a politics podcast, and I generally try to avoid politics, except where it intersects with tech and privacy. So here we are. We have a problem in this country, and I think it may have just become a crisis. It's a privacy problem. In the interest of making advertising more effective, big data collects large swathes of information about everyone they can, sifts through it looking for patterns, and uses that information to choose what advertisements to send you. Please understand, there's nothing nefarious here. There's no ill intent. They just want to figure out what they can sell you. That's it. It's all about making money by advertising to you things that they think you will be interested in. I mean, there's no point in sending ads for server management software to a nurse, right? No point in sending ads for nursing equipment to a construction worker, right? No point in trying to sell steel-toed boots to a system administrator. Okay, maybe for somebody that works in the data center, but you get the idea. The point is that they're trying to make the most out of the limited slice of your attention that they can to advertise to you. That's it. Nothing more. So, how do they do it? Well, they use the same basic technique that an insurance company uses to estimate how much of a risk you are to them. They gather up as much information as they can, and they correlate it with things. Private investigator Steve Rambam is very fond of explaining that back when Volkswagen reintroduced the Beetle, they did this kind of research to find out where to advertise it, and they found that the audience they needed correlated strongly to people who have a cat and eat crunchy peanut butter. It's strange, right? It doesn't make sense, but it doesn't have to. You know, we're not looking for causation here, only correlation. So if it really doesn't matter why things correlate, only that they do, they don't even have to correlate with perfect accuracy to be useful. I mean, I have a cat and I eat crunchy peanut butter. There's no Volkswagen in my driveway. Keep that in mind. You know, correlations like this aren't evidence of anything. They're just a vague indicator of an elevated probability. There is a well-documented story about how retail giant Target determined, successfully, that one of their customers was pregnant. Using this information, they very helpfully sent coupons to the customer's home for products that a prospective mom would need. Diapers, strollers, bottles, formula, car seat, you get the idea. As I said, there's nothing nefarious here. They just wanted to sell her stuff. But as I said last week, that doesn't make it not dangerous. Target sent these helpful coupons to their customer's home. There's only one problem. The prospective mom was a teenage girl who had not yet broken the news to her father. All right, that was 10 years ago. Between then and now, data storage has become cheaper, computing horsepower has become more abundant, and sensors? Well, smartphones were plentiful back then, that's probably how they figured her out, but they're ubiquitous now. Now, I passed the mic around at the recent Albany 2600 meeting, and I got a few thoughts on privacy, but I think that this one from Objectical was probably the most meaningful.
It's pretty terrible, because so many people who are affected by it have already put out a huge data trail that could come back and bite them. And their challenge really is to try to separate themselves from their existing data trail.
So let's talk about that data trail, shall we? Let's start with your search history. Oftentimes, when we want to know something, we start with a search. Maybe we type it in, or maybe we say those magic words. Okay, Google, hey Siri, Alexa, where is the nearest furry convention? By the way, I'm kind of hoping that somebody's listening to this out loud and that I just generated some chaos by triggering a bunch of smart devices. If you're using these services in that way, you probably deserve what just happened. But if that happened, I want you to notice something in the results that you got. The question has nothing in it about location, and I bet you still got a valid answer. See, those systems, they know where you are. They also know what you've asked about in the past. All of that becomes part of the profile that they build on you to determine what they can sell you. But I want you to think about what all this means when you put it together. They know where you are, they know where you live, and they know what is going on in your life. So where does this come in contact with the Supreme Court decision? Roe was, of course, about abortion. But it was not only about abortion. More generally, it was about privacy. It was based on an idea that the government has no business sticking its nose into our private lives. The fact that the majority opinion explicitly stated that the court is also going after Griswold versus Connecticut and Obergefell versus Hodges demonstrates this, as both of those cases were based on the same premise of a right to privacy. So listen up. As far as the majority of the justices are concerned, you do not have a right to privacy. That means we're going to have to rein it in ourselves. This puts our interests at odds with those of big data. Now, it's arguable, and indeed I have argued, that they've always been at odds. I've mentioned before that whatever is recorded in a physical file, a computer file, a record, and a database, all that can be subjected to legal discovery. For most of us, most of the time, that's not a problem. However, when political folks suddenly have free rein to seek out people who might be traveling to get a medical procedure that they don't think you ought to be able to get, once they've opened Pandora's box, who knows what else they're going to start looking at as well. Privacy matters. How do we protect our privacy? That's the big question. It doesn't, unfortunately, have any easy answers. Here's what Fongaboo had to say on the topic.
I'll just share a wish for privacy, and that is I'd like to see a really turnkey solution for imaging Android phones to an external device. I had some solutions that were close to that, but they weren't really turnkey, and it was kind of like plug and pray. The idea being I would love to be able to just easily back up my phone to an external device, then wipe the phone, go through a security checkpoint, you know, at the airport or elsewhere, and then once I'm on the plane, plug my external device back into my phone, re-image it from the backup that I made, and have it be exactly the way it was before.
Objectical had a few thoughts on the topic.
I'm a big proponent of and user of Proton. I think that their VPN is great, their mail is great. They're creating a whole separate privacy by default ecosystem. You can get like a $40 smartphone. You could, you know, configure it with Proton. You know, if you're skilled or know somebody who's skilled, you could also flash it with a different operating system. And that's not a bad setup right there. If you get a prepaid smartphone plan, then basically you can have a separate persona that you could network with other people. And another approach is, you know, you can have a burner device that you don't have a SIM card in, but you only use on at public Wi-Fi locations. And that's a nice way to, you know, have, if there's somebody observing you, your location is going to look like it's just, you know, coming in and out of existence here and there. And as long as you try to avoid, you know, making, you know, patterns that an observer could pick up on. Well, like if you avoid having a routine, like say, you know, you hit several cafes and some libraries, but you never do them in the same order or at the same time. Like, that's, I think, pretty sufficient. It's probably about the best you could do these days, to my knowledge.
Of course, keeping your burner phone private requires a bit of discipline.
Who the heck wants to, you know, cycle through burners and accounts and have to redo all this stuff? It's easier to just use encryption. It's so much easier to just get on some encrypted platform that, you know, you feel is a fit for your choice and, you know, your tech savviness or lack thereof. And you're going to meet more people who are coordinating there in a, you know, hopefully a secure fashion.
We also spoke about poisoning the well a bit with bad data.
Your regular cell phone or devices, you can like leave them at home or in locations that you habitually are at, and just, you know, just leave it playing YouTube or, you know, like, you know, on an active web page or, you know, doing something that blends into your regular routine. You know, so then your second persona can be active somewhere else at the same time, and you have plausible deniability. Oh, where were you? Oh, I was just watching YouTube all afternoon.
So those are some of the thoughts of the 2600 crowd in Albany. Now, here's the problem. Both of these commenters said one critical thing in so many words, and there's no easy way to protect your privacy. You might also have noticed that they used different threat models. Understanding your threat model and making sure it's appropriate is an important thing to do. One of the two was more focused on going through things like a TSA or a border checkpoint, while the other was really more focused on the profile in the cloud. Still, as you could hear, it's not completely hopeless. Muggles and nerds need to form alliances. And for those of us in the nerd community, this is our time to shine. Help out wherever you can, and let's help people wrest back control. After my call-out last week, I did get a few suggestions for OPSEC tips. OPSEC, as I mentioned before, is a military term, short for Operations Security, and it refers primarily to controlling information that might help someone cause you harm. However, in colloquial terms, it kind of grows to also cover just your own personal security. So I have two teed up this week. The first one comes from Azriel, who drew my attention to a very dangerous trend. In a nutshell, it's not new for evil people to look for vulnerable targets. The landscape that has been created by the Dobbs decision will lead to a class of vulnerable targets we haven't seen much of in the past 50 years. And the desperation of people in this cohort can lead to bad decisions. One such bad decision is to trust a random standalone stranger to help. So, the OPSEC tip here is this. If you need help, don't get it from some random stranger on the internet. There is too much of a risk of you connecting yourself up with a creep, a shyster, or a quack. Just don't. Instead, seek out well-established aid organizations. In this case, you will probably be looking for somebody out of state, and seek their help. The other OPSEC tip comes from Art, and this is a little bit more foundational and probably more widely useful. He writes, in all caps I might add, "Turn off SMS message display on your phone's lock screen." He continues, "I always thought the convenience outweighed the security implications until I had to reset an account password that uses SMS as my second factor. Right there, on my locked phone was the 6-digit code in the message synopsis for the account that I was resetting. Any attacker who has a locked phone can easily acquire all accounts that use SMS two-factor authentication if your lock screen notification shows message content." As I've said before, SMS two-factor authentication is a little bit problematic. You should probably try to avoid it if you can. However, it's better than nothing. Combined with this piece of advice from Art, it could be a little bit better than it might otherwise be. Art and Asriel, thank you very much for your suggestions. As usual, we will end this week's show with the fail of the week. This week's winner is Tesla. I'm sure you all know very well by now that I am a proponent of working remotely if your job is one that can be carried out from a distance. Not only does remote work decrease your likelihood of coming down with something nasty, I haven't had a cold in over 2 years, but it also saves energy, both to heat and cool the office and to transport you to and from that office. It saves time, again because of the lack of commute. It's good stuff. Elon Musk isn't having it. It seems as though he has been dabbling with buying Twitter, a tech company, which presumably has people that could work remotely, he is also demanding that remote work end at Tesla and that employees actually come to the office. It turns out he missed a few steps. First off, if you want to have your employees come to work, they're going to need places to sit. There apparently aren't enough desks available, or so says The Verge, for all of the employees because Tesla's headcount has doubled since 2019. On top of that, even if an employee could find a place to sit, the Wi-Fi currently deployed apparently is not up to the task. And why were we doing this? Anybody? No? Yeah, that's what I thought. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to RM-RF-No-Preserve-Root, Julie Bernstein, Asriel, Art, Lotus, Knight Rider 007, and The Axe That Slayed Me for story leads. Further thanks to Objectical and Fongaboo for appearing in this episode. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80, Our Who Got Punk music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Neither of which seem to be viable at this point for the moment. Shit. Almost had it solidly good enough. One was focused more on going through things like a TSA or a border checkpoint, and the other, with your profile in the crowd, was more focused on going through things like... Things. With your profile in the crowd. Damn it, I did it again. Don't get it from some stranger random. Yep,
Oh, and by the way, speaking of privacy, guys, can I have my phone back?